Welcome in to Week 17 Action New Orleans Saints home finale. We're here in the Superdome, and I say we, me, Jeff Nowak, Ashley O, and Luke Augusta. We've set it all up, getting ready for a noon start against the Las Vegas Raiders.
How's it going, Jeff? Last name. I didn't know your last name was Augusta. That's a great last name. That's a good golf name. I'm feeling good. How are you feeling?
Pretty good. It's like, mostly sad, though, honestly, that's we're
I'm
at the end
healthy.
Here already.
How about that? I'm feeling healthy.
Yeah, let's feeling healthy. I wish the wealthy was there, too, but I'm feeling good about this. It's just sad that we got two games left, obviously the home finale today, so our last time in the Dome this season for Saints football.
Yeah, you know, this season hasn't gone the way that
I think
a lot of people would have hoped. It hasn't gone the way it started. That's definitely true. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I kind of want to go back in a time capsule and, like, review some of the tweets from after week two when the Saints were definitely going to the Super Bowl and everyone was dunking on everybody. It doesn't feel that way now, and we've kind of reached this point where a win over a three-win Raiders team wouldn't even
be
feel
an upset.
That great.
It'd be an upset.
It would technically be an upset because the Raiders come in favored, which is crazy. I never thought you would see a three-win team walk into the Superdome as the betting favorite, but here we are. And, you know, I do think that there's a reality where you look at it and you say, okay, the Saints are better off losing in the sense of, hey, a draft pick, there's no playoffs on the line, there's whatever. I just don't think you could look at yourself in the mirror if you can't go out there and at least play a good football team against them. Like, if you go out there and you just don't look competitive, then that is bleak. It's bleak. So I don't know. I genuinely don't know what to expect today because we've watched this kind of setup with Spencer Rattler starting four times, and we've watched the Saints not look like they can compete on offense four times. Right? That's been the story, is no matter how good you play on defense, if you can't put up points, you're not going to win games.
And that funny how that works, right?
That can't be the case today. Like, if that's the case today, I just don't know what to tell you because that is – I mean, you could at least make the argument that those first four starts came against good teams, quality teams, playoff-bound teams. That is not the case today. You have to at least look competitive with a three-win Raiders team, or I just don't know what you – who do you look at and say this is part of the future?
Looking at our LCMC health update, LCMC Health, 8 hospitals, 1 promise of keeping you well. Out for this matchup, Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick, also Chris Olave, we found out the other day, would not be taking part in today's game. He's out. Questionable for today's matchup, Nathan Shepard, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Rico Payton.
Rico.
Looking at also, the Saints have signed Kyle Hergel and Isaiah Stolberg to the active roster from the practice squad. They've also elevated Austin Deculus and running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the active roster for today's game. Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick have been put on injured reserve, so we know we won't see them for the rest of the year either. And hopefully all goes well. Obviously, Eric McCoy's elbow, we know, got injured last game.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything kind of blends together, right?
Trust your gut. The practice squad call-ups are very LSU themed. Austin Deculus and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you
go
know,
Tigers.
Both coming up. We'll see how much run Clyde gets today. It's tough to learn an offense in 2 weeks, but hey, what do you have to lose? You know, I think this is one theme of the last 2 weeks when you are in the same situation is, you know, see what you have in guys. And there's a few players like Clyde that I'd like to see more. I think we can talk about that more as the show goes on. But for Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick, you know, Lucas dealing with a knee injury, I think they're still trying to figure out exactly what the treatment needs to be for that. He was definitely going to be done for the year. It's just a question of surgery, no surgery, rehab, whatever it is, the extent of that injury. With Eric, I kind of got the feeling with Eric that if the season was longer, you know, maybe he would have been able to work back. If there were playoffs on the line, maybe he would have been able to work back. I don't know, for this week, maybe next week. But, you know, with the season being what it is and the injury being what it is, they just decided to shut him down, which is a smart move. You know, for some offensive linemen, you know, positions, an elbow injury might not be as significant as the center who has to snap the ball. And if you can't snap the ball, you can't play center. So, you know, that's a tough one. Like you mentioned, they did sign Kyle Hergel, so he will probably be your backup to Shane Lemieux today. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, Isaiah Stalbert's an interesting guy because he's a player that the Saints really like as a kind of a core special teamer. They exhausted his practice squad call-ups early in the year, and they've been trying to figure out a way to get him to the active roster. It just hasn't worked out from a numbers perspective. So it's cool to see a UDFA toil all season and get that call-up late in the year. So it's good for him.
going into this matchup against a Raiders squad, I think we said, that has won three games this year. Looking at the line right now, it's up to now a 2.5-point favorite for the Raiders in this matchup, which I guess when you have no Derek Carr, no Alvin Kamara, et cetera, Eric McCoy, that's what happens to you. But even though this Raiders team is a banged-up bunch as well, they're dealing with a bunch of injuries throughout this entire season, and, man, they've had a rotation at quarterback as well.
Yeah, I think the difference is quarterback, right? I think if you just think of it from the perspective of, hey, I'm putting money on the game, who do you feel more confident in? Do you feel more confident in Aiden O'Connell, or do you feel more confident in Spencer Rattler? And just from an outsider's perspective of, like, there's no hype nationally around Spencer Rattler. There might be hype locally around Spencer Rattler, but if you're national and you're watching this game and you just came off of that Packers game, you're like, why would I bet on the Saints? I'm betting on the Raiders.
They couldn't do anything, right?
Right. So, you know, it's the Saints' job to change that narrative, and I'd hope they could this week from the perspective of looking like a team that can score points. But, yeah, I mean, the Raiders, you know, it's funny because normally I would have spent a lot more time than I did this week kind of preparing for the Raiders. Not preparing in general. It was
a
short week,
I know what you mean.
But, like, you know, we lost the day, and that day that I lost was the day that I would typically spend going and thinking about what the Raiders are going to do. I treated this more like a preseason game, in the sense that this is a lot more about the Saints than it is about the Raiders, right?
For
like,
true.
Like in the preseason, I'm going to spend more time figuring out what the Saints are going to do than I will the other team, because it's a bunch of players that I don't really know about anyway. And other than Brock Bowers, Aiden O'Connell, some of these guys, like, well, I mean, what are you preparing for? Like, you got to go out there and play. So I don't know. It's a tough match. It's a tough situation to be in. Like, I'm curious to see. Darren Rizzi talked after last week's game and said, hey, I looked back the tape, and I was looking specifically for examples of,
the effort
right. wasn't there, because we got eliminated from the playoffs the day earlier. Maybe some guys were phoning it in. He said he didn't see that, you know, and I think to an extent he's right. You did get beat, and it looked like they were kind of beat mentally, but I think guys were going out there and putting in the effort. You know, they weren't just kind of making business decisions out there, but the Packers were just a better team. You know, over these last 2 weeks, I still think that's a question of, do you get the same level of motivation when things are, you know, just out the window? You call these kind of the love for the love of the game games, yeah. Right? You're playing for pride, you're playing for tape. And so we'll see. And I think it's a situation where if you do see guys start to phone it in, you bench them. Like, you sit them down, because it's not worth it. And it's like, there are guys behind you who want to play. So, you know, I don't think that's going to be an issue with this Saints team, but anytime you end up in this situation, it's something you have to be on the lookout for.
Yeah, and I think when you have, obviously, some leaders on your squad, like a Cam Jordan, like a DeMario Davis, and you see the effort they're putting out, it's hard not to follow their lead.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one thing to keep in mind for this game is, you know, this is a, you know, there's going to be change after this season. How much? I don't know. Where does it start? Where does it end? I don't know. Right. What's the plan going forward? What's the defense going to look like? What are the schemes going to look like? I don't know. But as you watch this game, keep in mind that, like, guys like Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Tyrann Mathieu, I don't think it's a lock that they come back next year. And it's the first time that I've been able to say that about a guy like Cam Jordan, or at least, like, from a very confident perspective, if he's coming back.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know. He did say that he wants to play beyond this year, but he also said, like, I don't want to play defensive tackle beyond this year. So, you know, they're going to have a conversation about that. So we'll have to see. But either way, like, you watch this game and appreciate that this may be the last game you see Cam Jordan in the Superdome. And same for a guy like DeMario, a guy like Tyrann Mathieu. I don't think you're going to move on from those guys. You did sign them to an extension before the season, and you are very kind of constricted by the salary cap and how you've navigated it, to the sense that moving on from those guys would be expensive, and it would not give you any cap relief this season. It would be a sign that you are rebuilding completely. But either way, if you're in the Dome today, make sure to cheer extra loud for those guys, because however frustrated you are about this season, I don't put it on those guys.
Maybe right? We could poach Cam for the Inside Black and Gold podcast.
I have a feeling he's got bigger fish to fry, Steve. I'm sorry.
We can't offer him the big bucks at all.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
We're here on First Take. You can sound off on the Oak and Heart Jewelers talk and text line. It's 504-260-1870. What you got planned for this home finale? Are you coming to the Dome to see this matchup against the Raiders? And now the Saints, a 2.5-point dog at home in this matchup. Very telling indeed. We're going to take a break. We'll get back, get into our Saints sound bank, a bunch of sounds. Spencer Rattler, Darren Rizzi, even Clyde Edwards-Alaire. Also some Hondo Carpenter sound, who covers the Raiders for the Sports Illustrated. We'll get some idea of the silver and black right there. He's got some lengthy breakdowns of the offense and just Brock Bowers in general, too. So taking a break here on First Take. Want to hear from you, 504-260-1870. We'll be back right after this, so stay tuned.
We've got to go out there and execute, play at a high level. It's our last home game, so we want to definitely go out on a high note.
We want to go on a high note, too. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak here on First Take. That was Spencer Rattler talking about some of his goals for the game. Yeah, this offense has not been able to execute efficiently at all, Jeff. That mauling in Green Bay was pretty brutal to withstand, and I know for you on the sideline it had to be rough, obviously, as well.
Yeah,
the problem, the demerit for me.
Yeah. The problem with going out on a high note is whatever range I had going into this season, it's down. I'm more of a baritone, or I'm not a whatever. You got the idea.
Alto?
Yeah. I'm a low note. That's where we are. Right. But No, I mean, what's a high note for the Saints team? That's really the question. Like, what can you accomplish?
A victory
over
in the home
these
finale.
Final two games that will make you feel better. Not good. You're not going to feel good after a 6-11, 7-whatever season.
Yeah.
But you can feel better about it. And one of the ways you can feel better about it is if these final two games, assuming Spencer Rattler starts both of them, he's obviously going to start today. They're keeping the window open for Derek Carr to potentially return in Week 18. I'd be surprised if he did. I think if I'm the Saints, I'm like, well, we'll see if we can get you out there against your former team. But I don't think it makes a ton of sense to get him out there against the Bucs. Whatever. If Spencer Rattler can go out there and look like a guy with potential,
right?
I think you feel a lot better. The problem is those first four starts are tough. And obviously you have that second half against the Commanders where you can say, hey, we showed some positivity here. There were no sacks. There were no turnovers. There was a two-minute touchdown drive in a clutch situation.
We'll just send them out there saying, great, it's the two-minute drill the entire game.
Well, the problem is you can't have someone go out there and start the first quarter of every game and then bench him and then put the other guy in. Like, you got to start the game, too. The guy who comes to mind as the ultimate backup, played well, is Kevin Cobb for the Eagles way back when. He played so well in a backup role that the Cardinals traded a second-round pick for him at the time.
Like, the Eagles were like, bye.
That's significant. And for their backup, Jimmy Garoppolo is a guy who got traded as a backup, too. And but Kevin Cobb went out there, and they were like, oh, you can't start. You just look good as a backup. This is a problem. And he never really had any success. So, like, that's a thing. Like, you see guys who play better in a backup role than they do in a starting role. And I just need to see Spencer show that he can succeed in a starting role. He can succeed with all the first-team reps without the other team game-planning for him. And play clean. Don't turn the ball over. Don't take sacks. Like, that's the answer.
Rattler was asked this week in the locker room, what does it mean making his sixth career NFL start? Oh, fifth career.
Yeah,
sorry.
It means a lot. You know, I didn't expect to be in this position that early, but we're here now. Obviously want to finish strong, last home game. You know, we definitely want to have a great showing and leave a good taste in everybody's mouth.
Sixth appearance, I guess. Fifth start.
Fifth start. And, you know, I looked this up. I spent some time this week and did my, you know, the research firm of me on my laptop. And so going back to 1970, I went back and looked at all the fifth round quarterbacks dating back to 1970. Only three started five or more games as a rookie. I'm not going to ask you to guess because you're never going to guess. In 2011, T.J. Yates with the Texans, he started 10 games in his career, five as a rookie.
Right.
He went 3-2. In 2004... I'm sorry, he went 2-3. In 2004, Craig Krenzel with the Bears, he started five games as a rookie.
Wow,
he went 3-2. Craig Krenzel, the most successful fifth-round pick probably in terms of, okay, the guy you'd want Spencer to probably emulate in terms of a guy who did not play well as a rookie but had a really successful career. Steve Grogan with the Patriots. Career, 135 starts. He went 75-65. As a rookie, he started seven games. He went 1-6. So if you're looking at that and you're like, okay, how can Spencer Rattler be Steve Grogan? He could start seven games. If he starts next week against the Bucs, probably not going to win that game. It's going to be a tough game. But if you want to go 1-6, I feel like winning one game is valuable in this instance. Like, you got to show how to win.
Absolutely,
can win games. Because I look at all these quarterbacks, all these fifth-round quarterbacks that had success over their careers. The ones who started as a rookie, they at least won a game. You know? Like, that's the biggest difference. And so, you know, there's fifth round rookies. There have been 65, 37 have started games. 17 started games as a rookie. They went 16-31 in those games. So the trend is not, you dominate as a fifth-round rookie, but in most instances, you go out there and you could find a way to win one game because kind of spinning that positivity forward. Like, you see a lot of these guys go out there and, you know, they'll start a game or two. If they don't have success, a lot of them, they never start again. Now, there are obviously other examples. Dak Prescott was a fourth-round pick. Brock Purdy was a seventh-round pick. Gardner Minshew was a sixth-round pick. What those guys have in common, one of the reasons they've had long, successful careers, or at least extended successful careers, is they won games as a rookie. Gardner Minshew went 6-6. Brock Purdy went 5-0. Dak Prescott, they went 13-3 in his rookie season. It's a lot easier to sell positivity around a late-round quarterback.
Just win, baby.
When you've won games, when you've shown that there can be positivity. So that's the key, I think.
Here's what Clint Kubiak, the Saints offensive coordinator, had to say about Spencer Rattler.
I see him win. I see him take the team to go win, whatever it takes, whether it's a 6-3 game like you saw on Thursday night, or it's a 50-48 banger. So I just want to go see him win.
What's the most important message that you want him to take from him?
Well, I would like him to learn that the ball is on fire. When the pass rush is out, we got to get out of our hands. We can't take sacks in 2 minutes. Got to make quick decisions, and you got to go above and beyond the X's and O's to get the job done for the team.
The ball is on fire.
The ball's on fire. I like that.
Get rid of it.
You know, sometimes every now and then Clint will grin when you say it's a question and be like, the ball's on fire. And you can tell it's something that he's like said on repeat to the team all week because he's got to, you know, that's my catchphrase, the ball's on fire. But no, I think it's exactly what I want to see. That's been my problem with Spencer is when sometimes I think he sees a look that he's not ready for, or he sees pressure from somewhere he's not expecting it, and he freezes, and either he makes a throw into a spot he shouldn't, or he holds onto the ball, or he panics, and just like the fumble against the Packers, that was a panic fumble. There's no way around it. You know, like, obviously, you know, a sack there isn't optimal, but a fumble there is the worst thing you could possibly do. Like, you talk all the time, don't make a bad play worse. That's exactly what he did there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can just throw that ball away, if you can dump it at the feet of your running back, if you can, you know, just do anything to avoid that play, that's a different scenario. You're probably not getting shut out. You're probably kicking a field goal there instead of, you know, giving the ball away near midfield. You know, the other example is another bad turnover was the interception right after that kind of spectacular jump pass moment. And I think that's been a problem for Spencer is, I don't know if maybe he kind of like when he makes a big play, he takes a deep breath and doesn't, you know, he's not as locked in. He's not as dialed in for that next play. But it does seem like every time he has a successful moment in a Saints jersey as a starter, it's followed up by a kind of head scratching, like what happened.
The old one step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, and so that's, you just want to be able to string positive plays together. Because there have been moments. One thing Darren Rizzi said this week that I think is right on is, you know, if you took Spencer Rattler's top 10 plays from that game and just put him on a highlight reel, you'd be like, oh man, we got something here. But then if you turned around and you took his bottom 10 plays from that game and put him on a low light reel, you'd be like, yikes.
Ooh, right.
This is bad. And it's like, it's got to be somewhere in the middle. Like your baseline has to be higher. Because you know the ceiling is high. You've seen it. You can see the talent. You can see the arm. You can see, you know, when he's in a rhythm, he can make big plays and he can make big throws. He can give guys chances to succeed. But when he's struggling, it's hard. It's bad.
No, we've talked about it, too. That one play where he made the jump pass was absolutely unbelievable. And then you turn around, next play, you throw a duck.
Very next play. A lot of times we'll say, like, oh, on the next play. No, literally the next play. It was a bad interception. It was a misread interception. I didn't see the defensive back sinking in coverage, and it's not the first time we've seen that happen, and now he's a rookie, right? And that's the risk you run when you throw a rookie in there is you're going to get shown looks that maybe you've never seen before, and you're not exactly sure what they're going to do, and you're going to make mistakes. But I don't know, like some positivity closing out this season. Because I think if you go out there and you can't look competitive against the Raiders, and who knows what happens next week against the Bucks, you're going to go into the offseason, you're going to be sitting there with a top whatever pick, and there's going to be quarterbacks on the board, and you're going to have to look at them. And the question is, do you feel like, hey, we have a guy here, or do you not? Because if you don't, then you have to go at least kick the tires on, hey, does this guy have a future? Does this quarterback have a future?
Yeah.
So that's what these next few games are going to be about for Spencer.
You're talking about the limiting the turnovers, and here's what Spencer Rattler had to say about that.
I think it's just having great focus every play, avoiding a couple disaster plays. Felt like I did a good job of that in prior games, but, you know, you're in a road environment like that. You just got to dial yourself in every single play. Understand that everybody has to do their job to have success on each play. But at the end of the day, the ball's in my hands. It's up to me to protect it. So definitely disappointed with you know, that last game. But, you know, want to be better this game to win. Because if you don't, you lose.
Yeah, not ideal conditions for Spencer Rattler in any of these games. We know he's been limited with playmakers. The offensive line has been banged up. But in the end of the story, nobody wants to hear any of that excuses, as you would say, for it, even though they are legitimate, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, right? But, like, you got to protect the ball. You're the quarterback.
Yeah.
The ball is in your hands on every play. You've got to protect the ball. He just hasn't done that well enough yet. There's two interceptions. It's the fumbles that are frustrating, because the fumbles are kind of more of a sign of, you know, and I used to feel this way about Daniel Jones. If you look back at Daniel Jones' career, one of the things he struggled with early in his career was he just didn't see the rush, and he wasn't able to protect the ball. Like, he wasn't able to identify where it was coming from early enough to avoid getting the ball knocked out, getting the ball stripped. And there was a couple plays in his rookie season in particular where you saw a guy just come clean off the edge. He didn't see him, and I know Jamal Adams was one of those. I think Chandler Jones had one. He just ripped the ball out of his hands. and I felt that way about Spencer sometimes. It's like, I don't know if he's identifying the rush well enough. And you know, that's, again, you're talking about a rookie. You don't want to start a rookie. There's a reason Sean Payton always erred toward these veteran backups that you could put in the game and feel like, oh, we don't have to start from scratch. You don't have that when you're dealing with a rookie. You got to kind of accept what you have and accept what he's capable of now and kind of look forward of, okay, what can he develop into in the future? The problem is, in today's NFL, you don't get that much time. You know, like, this is not what it was in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Like, you either succeed or you don't.
Ready to move on from you quickly, right?
Because there's a draft every year. There's young quarterbacks every year. And if you feel like the guy in the draft has more upside than the guy on your team, you're going to go draft the guy in the draft, right? You're going to go pick the guy in the draft. So, you know, you got to string something together that you can look at positively.
Talked about, obviously, the lack of weapons for Spencer Rattler. But there is someone he has been able to at least lean on in tight end Foster Moreau. And Rattler spoke about what Moreau means to him and this team.
You know, he's one of our guys right there. That's one of our rocks. Like, you know, he's a sure-handed guy, really smart, high IQ player, and has some of the best, if not the best, energy on the team. Great leader.
Coffee maker.
Yeah, we've talked about it before with Moreau. He definitely seems like someone, I don't know if he has interest in getting into coaching, maybe broadcasting, but definitely very vocal guy that is able to, you know, speak the game, makes you want to listen, and I think definitely is someone that at least Rattler can lean on in this offense, because there's not many pieces right now. Hopefully we get Marquez Valdes-Scantling in the mix today.
Yeah, I think he's still got stuff to do as a player before he worries about his broadcasting career, because I think he's had a really strong season. You know, and I think you're going to look at this season, you're going to say, okay, who exceeded expectations by the most?
And there's not many.
There's not a ton, but Foster's one of those guys. You know, his numbers aren't going to jump off the page. You're talking about 20-something catches, 200-something yards, 300 yards, 4 touchdowns. But it's the moments in which he catches these passes and the difficulty that these catches present that has been really impressive. And I don't know, I kind of feel like, hey, is it time that we try to, like, feature Foster Moreau more in the passing game?
Couldn't hurt.
It seems like every time they throw in the ball, I think in the month of December, he's 10 of 13 in targets, right? Why is it only 13? That's my question. Why isn't it more than that? And so I don't know. If I'm looking for things over these final 2 weeks to be happy about, I kind of feel like, hey, give Foster a bigger role in the passing game, and let's see what he does with it, because he's 27 years old, right? Like, he's got good hands. If you give him chances, he makes plays. Give him more chances. Give him more opportunities. I don't see why. What do you have to lose?
No, especially with all of, you know, the wide receivers are out, and a guy like Alvin Kamara not in the mix. You need any kind of playmaker in this offense that can provide a spark for you. Also, in this fifth start for Rattler, he was basically asked, what is your mindset for this game?
Can't waste this opportunity. Got to play great and, you know, take my game to a whole nother level in the offseason. Feel like I haven't even shown what I got fully yet. So hopefully we can do that on Sunday. But the mindset stays the same. Want to get better and better throughout this season and obviously in the offseason.
Yeah, just looking to improve. We need to see that out of Rattler. And I think, you know, you mentioned the turnovers. That's been a huge issue. And then just being able to read and recognition needs to get improving as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that is something he can get better at. You know, that's I think that's a myth that, like, okay, you either are or you aren't. You know, like you do develop over the course of time.
Right. I can't make your arm any better.
Right. I think arm strength, arm talent, that's something that you kind of just have to have. You know, height, you can't change, right. You know, stuff like that. But, you know, the term people want to use is moxie. And I don't know. I want to see that. I want to see kind of those intangible qualities that just make you feel like you're watching a starting quarterback. Because it is what it is. Like you're 5-10. You're not making the postseason. But there are very different ways you can finish out this season. And there's a very negative way you can finish out this season. And a loss to the Raiders in this environment, in your home environment, your final home game, will feel very negative. And you're going to have to, you know, I don't know, is Darren Rizzi a serious candidate to keep the job? We'll find out. But, you know, I think in order to do that, you have to show that you can lead this team in non-optimal circumstances. And this is anything but optimal. And I think one statement he can make is, you know, we were on a 7-game losing streak when I took over the job, and we were able to right the ship. Now, did it last the entire second half of the season? No, but you never expected that to be the case when you sent him in as the interim. I think there was a realistic possibility that you were the 3-win team in this matchup.
Yeah,
and instead you have 5 wins because you took down, you know, wins over the Falcons, over the Giants, and who was the other team they beat? I'm blanking.
Browns.
Yeah. Over the Browns. And you played tight games against the Rams and the Commanders. You lost big against the Packers. It's a very good team. And so I think if you can turn things around again, if you can finish out the season, you can say this is a trend. The trend is when things are going badly, I can right the ship. That's what you have to be able to say as Darren Rizzi. Now, if you can't do that, if you can't go out there and be competitive today, if you can't beat the Raiders, if you can't go to Tampa and in a stadium you've played very well in as a team and at least give them a run, then I think that kind of makes the decision for you. And you'll see. But I do know that the Saints, yeah, I don't think they are really into this process yet. I think they are going to wait for this evaluation to play out before they make a decision on who even their shortlist is for the head coach.
We've heard a little bit of rumblings of, you know, suspected candidates.
Sure, and that's always going to be the case. You're human. You're going to have these kind of ideas floating around in your brain.
Right.
But I don't think, like, officially they're going to really start this process until the end of the year. They're going to give Darren a chance to state his case, and that's a big statement today.
Looking at some of those rumors, I know mentioned was Mike Vrabel, the former Tennessee Titans head coach, and obviously the Patriots linebacker, and also a former Saints personnel in Aaron Glenn, who is the defensive coordinator with the Lions right now. And both are have some interesting qualities about them. Glenn, the familiarity here in New Orleans seems to, you know, scream like an easy choice, but there's still a ton of to think about there. You're basically, I don't want to say keeping around the Dennis Allen defense, but a lot of the same, I guess, schemes that DA would have, I would imagine that Aaron Glenn has as well.
Yeah, it probably would allow you to make that change with a minimal amount of turnover, which I don't know if that's what you want.
Maybe
is that what you
Clint
want?
Kubiak, I don't know.
I mean, that's the question, is what exactly are you looking for? And, you know, I think the term total rebuild gets thrown around, tear down,
whatever.
Right. I think it kind of loses the plot on, like, it's a lot more complicated of a process than just saying, all right, let's start over, hit the eject button, let's fire everybody and hire an entire new staff. Teams aren't really prone to do that as much as it sounds, as much as people seem to think they are. Like, there's so many decision makers throughout the building that you can't just pull everybody out and start from scratch. That said, I just hope when this process kind of plays out that if you go with Aaron Glenn, I have no issue with Aaron Glenn as a potential candidate to be the head coach. My only issue is, are you choosing Aaron Glenn because you're familiar with him and because of the Sean Payton connection and whatever? Because I just think we're past that. Like, I don't think the ghost of Sean Payton should continue being a major part of the decision-making in the Saints building on Airline Drive. As successful as things were, as well as that went, I think you have to chart your own course at this point.
Right, he's gone.
Right. Now, so if Aaron Glenn is the best candidate and you come through your process and you're like, we're all in on Aaron Glenn, I'm perfectly fine with that. But if the reason you're landing on Aaron Glenn is Sean Payton and the connection to Sean Payton, then I just don't like that decision-making process. And I think folks need to be honest with themselves and say, is that why we're doing this? Is that why you're choosing a particular guy? Because of his familiarity with Sean Payton. And I just think we're beyond that. That's gone. The continuity thing, it's over with. Let's start a new path here.
talking about Week 17, Saints versus Raiders, a noon kickoff coming up in the Caesars Superdome. We are coming up on the Bud Light Countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon at 10 a.m. We're going to take a break right now. Then when we get back, we'll get into more of our sound, hear from a little Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's been elevated to the active roster, maybe get some play today because the running back room is down their main man in Alvin Kamara. Like I said, we'll be back right after this. Stay tuned for more First Take after the break, right after this. Back here on First Take, Steve Geller with Jeff Nowak, and we got a call on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. You can sound off 504-260-1878. It says, hey guys, if the Saints lose today, don't hire Rizzi. Ask Jonathan Vilma if he wants the job. I don't care if he's got the experience. Thanks.
That is always funny to me. It's like, I don't want to hire this guy. I'd like to hire anyone whose name I know, because they will be better.
Yeah, he was obviously a great player on the field, but I think Vilma's happy in the broadcast booth.
Well, it's just I don't get that idea of, like, call Drew Brees. Maybe he wants a job. Like, I don't know. The guys in the building, they at least have experience doing
the job.
I think
they've asked him, too, before if he'd like to come on to the coaching staff in any capacity.
No, he's not interested in
coaching.
No, he's
not.
He's busy. He's got pickleball and stuff to deal with. He's got little burgers. Not big burgers, but little ones. He's worried about the little ones. That's tough, you know? I don't know. I don't really want to sit here and talk about the coaching search all day. I get why people want to do that because, you know, they want to look past these final two games.
Right, exactly.
But the Saints aren't going to do that. They're going to look at these final two games. And, you know, I do think it's interesting. You look across the sideline, and you look at Antonio Pierce, and you say, well, this is an example of a team.
There you go, right.
Getting kind of turned around in the second half by an interim head coach. And saying, hey, we're going to give this guy the job. And, you know, it always makes sense in the moment. And then you look at it and you're 3-12 and you're like, did we make the right decision? I think they're going to give Antonio Pierce another year. But, you know, if you're trying to argue against, hey, do we want to go with the interim? You look at Antonio Pierce and you say, man, they did not sustain that whatever energy they had at all. Davante Adams basically quit on him. You know, and that's not a good look. And I don't want to compare Rizzi and Antonio Pierce, but I think from a vibes perspective, like, you kind of got that similar, like, man, people really rallied behind Antonio Pierce last year, and I don't know if you're getting that same level of commitment this year. So I don't know. I don't think that the Saints are going to base their decisions on what the Raiders did, but it is kind of an interesting case study and what it looks like to hire an interim, because it's a lot rarer than you'd think when you consider how many coaches get fired every year. And how many interim head coaches there actually are, and how few get hired, so we'll have to see. I do wonder though, like, if your goal is to hire a new head coach and keep Darren Rizzi around, as an interim, you know, as a guy who's would have then interviewed for this job twice, do you stay where you got passed over twice? I don't know, because
I just hope he doesn't end up the special teams coordinator in Denver then.
it's a good question. And the other guy that you look at and you say, well, this is a really successful case study is Dan Campbell, who, you know, didn't get the head coach job where he was the interim, which,
yeah,
Darren Rizzi was on that staff down in Miami, but has turned out to be a very successful head coach with the Lions and probably doesn't get that experience without the interim experience. And I don't know, do you think the Dolphins are sitting there like, man, we wish we had hired Dan Campbell? Maybe. So I don't know. We'll have to see, but I don't think the answer is going to be just hire someone whose name you know, because that's just going back to the text. Like, I think that's always silly. Like, oh, this guy, I recognize him, so he's got to be better than what we have in the building. That's not always the case.
At least nobody's bringing up Pete Carroll to me. I don't want to hear that one at all either. Please.
Yeah, the whole hire a 70-year-old head coach thing. I don't think that's the rebuild that you want.
Looking at this running back room, Jeff, going into the game, we have no Alvin Kamara. He is out still with that groin issue. Don't know if he'll return for next week against the Buccaneers. Coach Rizzi did mention the fact that he'd like to suit up and doesn't want his season to be over. We've talked about this but a ton. I don't think 50 yards to get it to 1,000 is that big of a deal and important, but if Alvin wants to achieve that, sure, why not? Knock your socks off. But I just don't think this team wants to get their prime playmaker any more dinged up than he already is. Looking at who you do have, Kendra Miller, Jamal Williams, Jordan Mims, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who has been elevated. And I'm curious, do you think we could see some run from him today in this offense?
I'd be surprised. I really would.
You think he might be inactive?
No, I think he'll be active. I'd just be surprised if he has a significant role. We'll see. I don't think you would have elevated from the practice squad just to make him inactive.
Yeah.
I just don't see what the value would be in that. But, no, I think this should be a Kendre Miller, Jordan Mims game, just like last week. Jamal Williams is going to factor in there, I imagine. But, no, I think this is a – I think just like last week, I'm looking for Kendre to make an impact. And I think one of the issues last week was you got out of your game plan really early. You got in a 21-0 hole early in the game, and you were kind of in the two-minute drill your entire second half, and Jordan Mims was more the two-minute guy. But when I asked Clint Kubiak about it this week, he basically said Jordan earned the right to be in the game in the second half. So clearly they liked what Jordan was able to do. I think Kendre did get confused a couple times. There was one screen pass where it just looked like he didn't know where to line up. And that definitely didn't sit well with coaches. And if they feel like they can't trust you out there, you're not going to get reps. And I know that's, you know, it's weird to even be saying this late in the season, but it's been an issue for Kendre is, you know, it's A, he hasn't been on the field, and B, I don't think they know what to expect from him when he goes out there. I know that was an issue when DA was here. So we'll see. I'd hope that he's able to go out there and put together a more representative performance like he was able to do in week 18 last year against the Falcons. I expect he's going to get the lion's share of the carries today, and in part because I don't think the game plan is going to get away from you the way it did last week. If you are unable to keep the scoreboard close against the Raiders, then I don't even know why we're talking about it.
Obviously, with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a guy that grew up in Baton Rouge, played for LSU, wearing the black and gold, and talked about how happy he is now to be in a Saints uniform.
It's really hard to put in words, but it most definitely put tears in my eyes. And, you know, even my wife, you know, she's from Baton Rouge, and us being able to come home, and she graduated from Xavier right down the street. So it's a full swing of emotions, but not a better place to be.
And how big of a Saints fan was Clyde growing up in Baton Rouge?
I had multiple Reggie Bush, Pierre Thomas, and Deuce McAllister posters in my room. And my mom was crazy. We were texting when I was on the way up here, and she found my a Saints puffer that I used to wear with my name embroidered on it and everything. So she was like, you know, I don't know if this is going to be something that comes full circle, but I'm praying that you're able to come home. And sure enough, I wouldn't say 5-10 minutes later, I was getting a phone call. So it was pretty sweet.
Had Reggie, Pierre, and Deuce on his wall, so now he's in black and gold. Pretty cool moment for him, obviously. And you see Clyde may be able to make a difference next year with this team. We'll see what he's got still left in the tank. I think that it's a good feel-good story, hopefully, going forward for a guy that has gone through some tough times after being a first-round pick.
No, I mean, I agree. I agree with you. I'd like to see him get out there if he can.
We're going to take a break here on First Take, and then we'll wrap things up heading into hour number two, getting ready for a noon kickoff in the Caesars Superdome. Saints Raiders coming up very soon right here on WWL. Be back after the break. Wrapping up this hour of First Take, Saints taking on the Raiders today. It's 5-10 New Orleans versus 3-12 Las Vegas. The Raiders, silver and black, coming in now as 2.5-point favorites for this matchup. We'll get more into our sound bank next hour. Interim head coach Darren Rizzi and also Sports Illustrated's Hondo Carpenter breaks down more of the Raiders for us. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak heading to the news break, and we'll be back with more First Take right after this. So stay tuned, folks.